Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 6, side 1. Chewbacca's original life debt was to Han, and it pained him terribly to let Han go into this kind of danger without him. But Leia and the twins were also under the Wookiee's protection, and it would be equally unthinkable for him to leave them unguarded in the palace. And then, even as he tried to think of a solution, Luke saw his sister's eyes light up. "I have an idea," she said carefully. They all listened to it, and to Han's obviously stunned surprise, Chewbacca agreed at once. "You're kidding," Han said. "This is a joke, right?" "Yeah, it's a joke. 'Cause if you think I'm going to leave Leia and the twins..." "It's the only way, Han," Leia said quietly. "Chewie's going to be miserable any other way." "Chewie's been miserable before," Han shot back. "He'll get over it. Come on, Luke, tell her." Luke shook his head. "Sorry, Han, I happen to think it's a good idea." He hesitated, but couldn't resist. "I guess it's one of those crazy Jedi things." "Very funny," Han growled. He looked around the room again. "Lando? Winter? Come on, one of you say something." "Don't look at me, Han," Lando said, holding up his hands. "I'm out of this part of the discussion."
"As for me, I trust Princess Leia's judgment," Winter added. "If she believes we'll be safe, I'm willing to accept that."
"You've got a few days to get used to the idea," Leia reminded him, before Han could say anything more. "Maybe we can change your mind." The look on Han's face wasn't encouraging, but he nodded anyway. "Yeah, sure." There was a moment of silence. "So that's it?" Lando asked at last.
"That's it," Leia confirmed. "We've got a mission to plan. Let's get to it."
Chapter 12. From the corner of the communications desk, the intercom pinged. "Carda?" Denkin's voice came tiredly. "We're coming up on the Bilbringi system. Break out in about 5 minutes."
"We'll be right there," Carda told him. "Make sure the turbo lasers are manned. No telling what we're going to run into."
"Right," Denkin said. "Out."
Carda tapped off the intercom and keyed off the desk's decryptors.
"He sounds tired," Avis commented from the other side of the desk as he put down his data pad.
"Almost as tired as you look," Carda said, giving the display he'd been studying one last scan before shutting it down as well.
The report from his people on Ancoran, like the others before it, all negative.
"It must be too long since we've had to pull double shifts," he added to Avis. "No one's used to it anymore. I'll have to include that in future training exercises."
"I'm sure the crew will love it," Avis said dryly. "We'd hate to have people think we were soft."
"Contrary to our image," Carda agreed, standing up. "Let's go. We'll finish sorting through these later."
"For all the good it'll do," Avis grunted.
"Are you absolutely sure those were clones Skywalker spotted on Burchest?"
"Skywalker was sure," Carda said as they left the office and headed for the bridge. "I trust you're not suggesting the noble Jedi would have lied to me."
"Not lied, no." Avis shook his head. "I'm just wondering if the whole thing could have been a setup. Something Thrawn deliberately dangled in front of you to put us off the real pipeline."
"That thought has occurred to me," Carda agreed. "Even given Governor Staffa's indebtedness to us, we seem to get in and out of the system just that little bit too easily."
"You didn't mention these reservations when you were passing out search assignments back at Chazwa."
"I'm sure similar thoughts have already occurred to each of the others," Carda assured him. "Just as the thought has undoubtedly occurred to them
that if there's an Imperial agent among us, we should do our best to keep him believing we're buying Grand Admiral Thrawn's deception, if it is a deception. And if there's an Imperial agent in the group, Ave said. Carter smiled. If we had some Rualki, we could have Rualki and Menkuro. If we had some Menkuro, Aves finished the old saying. You still think Farrier's working for Thrawn, don't you? Carter shrugged. It's only his word against Solo's that he wasn't a willing agent of the Empire in the Katana fleet business. That why you had Torvay take that assault shuttle off to the Roach system? Right, Carter nodded, wishing briefly that Mara was here. Avis was a good enough man, but he needed things laid out in front of him that Mara would have instantly picked up on her own. I know a couple of Verpine out there who owe me a favor. If the assault shuttle is rigged in any way, they'll find it. The door to the bridge slid open, and they stepped inside. Status? Carter asked as he glanced through the viewport at the mottled sky of hyperspace rolling past. All systems showing ready, Duncan said, yielding the helm seat to Avis. Balig, Lacton, and Corvus are at the turbolasers. Thank you, Carter said, sitting down beside Avis at the co-pilot station. Stick around, Duncan. You're going to be captain today. I'm honored, Duncan said wryly, stepping over to the comm station and sitting down. What do you suppose this is all about? Aves asked, as he got the ship ready for breakout. No idea, Carter admitted. According to Parta, all Nazik would say was that I might want to come by Bilbringi after our rendezvous with the others at Chazwa. Probably the eye-catching lesson for the Empire he and Elor were talking about at Trogan, Aves said heavily. I don't think I'm going to like this. Just remember that whatever happens, we're innocent bystanders, Carter reminded him. An incoming freighter with an authorized delivery schedule and a cargo of Coensire power converters. Perfectly legitimate. As long as they don't look too close at any of it, Aves said. Okay, here we go. He eased the hyperdrive levers forward, and the star lines appeared and collapsed again into a background of stars. A background of stars, half-completed ships, service and construction vessels, and floating dockyard platforms. And almost directly ahead of the Wildcard, a massive Golan II battle station, bristling with armament. They had arrived at the Imperial shipyards of Bilbringi. Duncan whistled softly. Look at all that new construction, he said, his voice awed. They aren't kidding around, are they? No, they're not, Carter agreed. Nor are they kidding around at Ord Trassi or Yaga Minor. And if Thrawn was putting half as much effort into his cloning operation as he was into warship construction... Incoming freighter, this is Bilbringi Control, an official-sounding voice from the comm cut him off. Identify yourself and your home port and state your business. Duncan, Carter murmured. Duncan nodded. Freighter Hab Camber out of Valrar, he said briskly into the comm. Captain Abel Quiller in command, carrying a shipment of power converters for Dock 47. Acknowledged, the controller said. Stand by for confirmation. Aves tapped Carter on the arm and pointed to the battle station ahead. They're launching an assault shuttle, he said, and launching it in the wild Carter's direction. Hold course, Carter told him quietly. They may just be seeing how nervous we are. Or else they're expecting trouble, Aves countered. Or are cleaning up after it, Duncan put in. If Mezik's already been here... Freighter Hab Camber, you're ordered to hold position there, the controller broke in.
An inspection team is on its way to examine your shipment order.
Denken keyed the comm.
Why, what's wrong with it? He asked, with just the right mixture of puzzlement and annoyance.
Look, I've got a business to run here. I haven't got time for any bureaucratic nonsense.
If you'd prefer, we can arrange to end all your scheduling problems right here and now, the controller offered in a nasty voice. If that doesn't appeal to you, I'd suggest you prepare to receive boarders.
Acknowledged, Control, Duncan growled. I just hope they're fast.
Control out.
Duncan looked at Carda.
Now what?
We prepare to receive boarders, Carda said, letting his gaze sweep across the expanse of the shipyards.
If Mezik was keeping to the tentative schedule he'd given Parta, he ought to be showing up sometime soon.
He paused.
Aves, get me a reading on those, he said, pointing to a cluster of dark, irregular spots drifting near the center of the shipyard area. They don't look like ships to me.
They're not, Aves confirmed a few seconds later. Look to be mid-size asteroids, maybe 40 meters across each. I make the count 22 of them.
Odd, Carda said, frowning at the sensor focus display Aves had pulled up.
There were over 30 small support craft in the area, he saw, with what seemed to be a similar number of maintenance-suited workers moving around the asteroids.
I wonder what the Imperials are doing with that many asteroids.
Could be mining them, Aves suggested hesitantly. I've never heard of anyone hauling the whole asteroid to a shipyard, though.
Neither have I, Carda nodded. It's just a thought, but I wonder if they could have something to do with Thrawn's magic superweapon, the one he hit Ukiyo and Wustri with.
That might explain the heavy security, Aves said. Speaking of which, that assault shuttle's still coming. Are we going to let them board?
Unless you'd rather turn and run, I don't see many alternatives, Carda said.
Duncan, how much scrutiny can our delivery schedule handle?
It can stand a lot, Duncan said slowly. Depends a little on if they suspect something or if they're just being careful.
Carda, take a look about 40 degrees to port side. That half-finished Imperial Star Destroyer. See it?
Carda swiveled in his seat. The Star Destroyer was, in fact, considerably more than half-finished, with only the command superstructure and sections of the forward bastion ridgeline left to add.
I see it, he said. What about it?
There seems to be some activity around... And in mid-sentence, the starboard flank of the Star Destroyer blew up.
Aves whistled in startled awe.
Scratch one warship, he said, as a section of the forward hull followed the flank to fiery oblivion. Mezik, you think?
I don't think there's any doubt, Carda said, keying his main display for a closer view.
For a moment, silhouetted against the boiling flames, he caught a glimpse of a half-dozen freighter-sized craft angling swiftly toward the shipyard perimeter.
I also think they may have cut things a bit too fine, he added, looking up again at the Star Destroyer.
A group of disaster control craft were already swarming in toward the burning ship, three squadrons of TIE fighters right behind them. And then, abruptly, the focal point of the incoming fighter cloud shifted from the Star Destroyer to the vector the escaping freighters had taken.
They've been spotted, Carda said grimly, giving the situation a quick assessment.
Mazik's group was outnumbered and outgunned, an imbalance that would likely get worse before they could get far enough out from the shipyard clutter to make their escape to hyperspace. The wild Carda's three turbolasers would go a long way toward evening those odds. Unfortunately, the center of action was too far away for them to make any significant difference to the outcome.
We going to help him out?
Avis murmured.
By all rights, we shouldn't lift a finger, Carter told him, keying the nav computer to start their own light speed calculation and tapping the intercom. Helping to salvage careless tactical planning only encourages more of the same. But I suppose we can't just sit here. Corvus?
Here,
Corvus's voice came. On my command, you're to open fire on that approaching assault shuttle, Carter ordered. Valig and Lacton, you'll target the battle station. See how much chaos we can cause. At the same time, Avis, you'll bring us around onto a vector of...
Wait a minute, Carter, Duncan cut him off. There, 50 degrees port side.
Carter looked. There, straddling the same vector Mazik's sabotage crew was escaping along, a pair of Corellian gunships had shot in from hyperspace. A formation of TIE fighters that had been sweeping in from approximately that direction swerved to intercept, and were promptly blown into flaming dust.
Well, well, Carter said. Perhaps Mazik's tactics aren't as bad as I thought.
That's got to be Elor's people, Avis said.
Carter nodded. Agreed. Corellian gunships are a bit out of Mazik's style, certainly out of his budget. It's a strategy that would certainly appeal to the legendary Duros cultural recklessness.
I'd have thought Corellian gunships would be a strain on Elor's budget, too, Duncan commented. You think he stole them from the New Republic?
Stole is such a harsh word, Carter chided mildly. I expect he considers them merely an informal loan. New Republic ships often use the line of Duros maintenance depots scattered through the trade spine, and Elor has a silent interest in several of them.
I bet there'll be some complaints about the service this time around, Avis said dryly. By the way, are we still planning to hit that assault shuttle?
Carter had almost forgotten about that.
No, actually. Corvus, Balig, Lacton, power down those turbo lasers. Everyone else, stand down from alert and prepare to receive Imperial inspectors.
He got acknowledgments and turned back to find Avis staring at him. We're not going to run? The other asked carefully. Not even after that? He nodded toward the firefight blazing off to portside.
What's happening out there has absolutely nothing to do with us, Carter said, giving the other his best innocent look. We're an independent freighter with a cargo of power converters, remember?
Yeah, but...
More to the point, it might be useful to see what happens in the aftermath of this raid, Carter went on, gazing back at the ships.
With their immediate exit vector being covered by Elor's gunships, and with the Yard's capital ships too far away to reach them in time, the raiders looked well on their way to a relatively clean escape.
Listen to their communications traffic. Watch their cleanup and post-raid security adjustments. Get an assessment of how much damage was actually done, that sort of thing.
Avis didn't look convinced, but he knew better than to argue the point.
If you think we can pull it off, he said doubtfully, I mean, with the bounty on us and all.
This is the last place an Imperial commander would expect us to show up, Carter assured him. Hence, no one here will be watching for us.
Certainly not on a ship under the command of Captain Abel Quiller, Duncan said, unstrapping and standing up. Impatient and bombastic, right?
Right, Carter said. But don't overdo the bombastic part. We don't want any hostility toward you, just contempt.
Got it, Duncan nodded. He left the bridge, and Carter turned back to gaze at the smoldering wreckage of the now stillborn Star Destroyer. An eye-catching lesson, indeed, and one that Carter would have argued strongly against if Mazik and Elor had asked his advice. But they hadn't, and they'd gone ahead and done it. And now the lot was even more strongly cast than it had been after Trogon, because Grand Admiral Thrawn would not let this go by without a swift and violent response. And if he could trace the attack back to Mazik, and from there back to him...
"We're not going to be able to stop here," he murmured, half to himself. "We're going to have to organize, all of us."
"What?" Aves asked. Carter focused on him, on that open and puzzled face, clever in its own way, but neither brilliant nor intuitive.
"Never mind," he told the other, smiling to take any possible sting out of the words.
He turned back to the approaching assault shuttle and vowed that when this was over, he would find a way to get Mara back. The last page scrolled across the display, and Thrawn looked up at the man standing at stiff attention before him.
"Have you anything to add to this report, General Drost?" he asked, his voice quiet.
Far too quiet, in Pelion's opinion. Certainly quieter than Pelion's voice would have been had he been in command here. Looking out the Chimera's viewport at the blackened wreckage that had once been a nearly completed and highly valuable Imperial Star Destroyer, it was all he could do to stand silently beside the Grand Admiral and not take Drost's head off. It was no more than the man deserved. And Drost knew it.
"No, sir," he said, his voice sounding strained.
Thrawn held his eyes a moment longer, then turned his gaze out the viewport.
"Can you offer me any reason why you should not be relieved of command?"
The faintest of sighs escaped Drost's lips.
"No, sir," he said again.
For a long moment, the only sound was the muted background murmur of the Chimera's bridge. Pelion glowered at Drost's carved stone face, wondering what his punishment would be. At the very least, a fiasco like this ought to earn him a summary court-martial and dismissal on charges of gross negligence. At the very most. Well, there was always Lord Vader's traditional response to incompetence. And Rook was already standing close at hand behind Thrawn's command chair.
"Return to your headquarters, General," Thrawn said. "The Chimera will be leaving here in approximately 30 hours. You have until then to design and implement a new security system for the shipyards. At that point, I'll make my decision about your future."
Drost glanced at Pelion, looked back at Thrawn.
"Understood, sir," he said. "I won't fail you again, Admiral." "I trust not," Thrawn said, the barest hint of veiled threat in his voice. "Dismissed."
Drost nodded and turned away, a freshly awakened determination in his step.
"You disapprove, Captain?"
Pelion forced himself to meet those glowing red eyes. "I would have thought a more punitive response would be called for," he said.
"Drost is a good enough man in his way," Thrawn said evenly.
"His chief weakness is a tendency to become complacent. For the immediate future, at least, he should be cured of that."
Pelion looked back at the wreckage outside the Chimera's viewport. "A rather expensive lesson," he said sourly.
"Yes," Thrawn agreed. "And it demonstrates precisely why I didn't want Carda's smuggler associates stirred up."
Pelion frowned at him.
"This was the smugglers? I assumed it was a rebel sabotage squad."
"Drost is under that same impression," Thrawn said. "But the method and execution here were quite different from the usual rebel pattern. Mazik, I think, is the most likely suspect, though there are enough Duros elements woven into the style for Elor's group to also have been involved."
"I see," Pelion said slowly.
This put an entirely new spin on things. I presume that we'll be teaching them the folly of attacking the Empire.
I would like nothing better, Thrawn agreed. And at the height of the Empire's power, I wouldn't have hesitated to do so. Unfortunately, at this point, such a reaction would be counterproductive. Not only would it harden the smugglers' resolve, but would risk bringing others of the galaxy's fringe elements into open hostility against us.
We surely don't need their assistance and services that badly, Pelion said. Not now.
Our need for such vermin has certainly been reduced, Thrawn said. That doesn't mean we're yet in a position to abandon them entirely. But that's not really the point. The problem is the dangerous fact that those in the fringe are highly experienced at operating within official circles without any official permission to do so. Keeping them out of places like Bilbringi would require far more manpower than we have to spare at present.
Pelion ground his teeth. I understand that, sir, but we can't simply ignore an attack of this magnitude.
We won't, Thrawn promised quietly, his eyes glittering. And when it comes, our response will be to the Empire's best advantage.
He swiveled his chair to face the center of the shipyards.
In the meantime,
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
The shout roared through the bridge like a violent thunderclap, filling it from aft to forward and echoing back again. Pelion wrenched himself around, reflexively scrabbling for the blaster he wasn't wearing. Jorus Kabauth was striding toward them across the bridge, his eyes flashing above his flowing beard. An angry radiance seemed to burn the air around him. Behind him, the two stormtroopers guarding the entrance to the bridge were sprawled on the floor, unconscious or dead. Pelion swallowed hard, his hand groping for and finding the reassuring presence of the Isalimir nutrient frame stretched across the top of the Grand Admiral's command chair. The frame rotated away from his touch as Thrawn swiveled to face the approaching Jedi Master.
You wish to speak to me, Master Kabauth?
They have failed, Grand Admiral Thrawn,
Kabauth snarled at him.
Do you hear me? Your commandos have failed.
I hear you, Thrawn nodded calmly. What have you done to my guards?
My men, Kabauth snapped,
his voice again reverberating around the bridge. Even without the element of surprise, the trick was an effective one.
Mine. I command the Empire, Grand Admiral Thrawn, not you.
Thrawn turned to the side and caught the eye of the portside crew pit officer.
Call sickbay, he ordered the man. Have them send a team.
For a few painful heartbeats, Pelion thought Kabauth was going to object, or worse, take the crew pit officer down too. But all of his attention seemed to be focused on Thrawn.
Your commandos have failed, Grand Admiral Thrawn, he repeated, his voice now quiet and lethal.
I know, Thrawn said.
All of them, except the major in command, appear to have been killed. Kabauth drew himself up.
Then it is time for me to take this task upon myself. You will take me to Coruscant now.
Thrawn nodded.
Very well, Master Kabauth. We will load my special cargo, and then we shall go.
It was clearly not the answer Kabauth was expecting.
What?
He demanded, frowning.
I said that as soon as the special cargo has been loaded aboard the Chimera and the other ships, we'll leave here for Coruscant, Thrawn said.
Kabauth shot a look at Pelion,
his eyes seeming to probe for the information his Jedi senses were blinded to.
"What is this trick?"
he growled, looking back at Thrawn.
"There is no trick," Thrawn assured him. "I've decided that a lightning thrust into the heart of the rebellion will be the best way to shake their morale and prepare them for the next stage of the campaign. This will be that thrust."
Kamauth looked out the viewport, his eyes searching the vast reaches of the Bilbringi shipyards. His gaze swept past the blackened hulk of the Star Destroyer, drifted to the asteroids clustered in the central sector.
"Those," he demanded, jabbing a finger toward them, "are those your special cargo?"
"You're the Jedi Master," Thrawn said. "You tell me."
Kabauth glared at him, and Pelion held his breath. The Grand Admiral was baiting him, Pelion knew, a rather dangerous game in his opinion. The only people who knew precisely what Thrawn had in mind for those asteroids were currently protected by Isalimiri.
"Very well, Grand Admiral Thrawn," Kabauth said. "I will."
He took a deep breath and closed his eyes, and the lines in his face sharpened with a depth of mental strain Pelion hadn't seen in the Jedi Master for a long time. He watched the other, wondering what he was up to, and suddenly he understood. Out there, around the asteroids, were hundreds of officers and techs who had worked on the project, each of them with his own private speculations as to what the whole thing was about. Kabauth was reaching out to all those minds, trying to draw out those speculations and compile them into a complete picture.
"No,"
he snapped suddenly, turning his flashing eyes on Thrawn again.
"You can't destroy Coruscant, not until I have my Jedi."
Thrawn shook his head.
"I have no intention of destroying Coruscant."
"You lie,"
Kabauth cut him off, jabbing an accusing finger at him.
"You always lie to me. But no more. No more. I command the Empire and all its forces."
He raised his hands above his head, an eerie blue-white coronal sheen playing about them. Pelion cringed despite himself, remembering the lightning bolts Kabauth had thrown at them in the crypt on Wayland. But no lightning came. Kabauth simply stood there, his hands clutching at empty air, his eyes gazing toward infinity. Pelion frowned at him, and he was just considering asking Kabauth what he was talking about when he happened to glance down into the port side crew pit. The crewers were sitting stiffly in their chairs, their backs parade ground straight, their hands folded in their laps, their eyes staring blankly through their consoles. Behind them, the officers were equally stiff, equally motionless, equally oblivious. The starboard crew pit was the same as was the aft bridge, and on the consoles Pelion could see, which should have been active with incoming reports from other sectors of the ship, the displays had all gone static. It was a moment Pelion had expected and dreaded since that first visit to Wayland. Kabauth had taken command of the Chimera.
"Impressive," Thrawn said into the brittle silence. "Very impressive indeed. And what do you propose to do now?"
"Need I repeat myself?"
Kabauth said, his voice trembling slightly with obvious strain.
"I will take this ship to Coruscant, to take my Jedi, not to destroy them."
"It's a minimum of 5 days to Coruscant from here," Thrawn said coldly. 5 days, during which you'll have to maintain your control of the Chimera's 37,000 crewers. Longer, of course,
if you intend for them to actually fight at the end of that voyage. And if you intend for us to arrive with any support craft, that figure of 37,000 will increase rather steeply.
Cabal snorted contemptuously.
You doubt the power of the Force, Grand Admiral Thrawn?
Not at all, Thrawn said. I merely present the problems you and the Force will have to solve if you continue with this course of action. For instance, do you know where the Coruscant Sector fleet is based, or the number and types of ships making it up? Have you thought about how you will neutralize Coruscant's orbital battle stations and ground-based systems? Do you know who is in command of the planet's defenses at present, and how he or she is likely to deploy the available forces? Have you considered Coruscant's energy field? Do you know how best to use the strategic and tactical capabilities of an Imperial Star Destroyer?
You seek to confuse me, Cabalth accused. Your men, my men, know the answers to all those questions.
To some of them, yes, Thrawn said. But you cannot learn the answers, not all of them. Certainly not quickly enough.
I control the Force, Cabalth repeated angrily.
But to Pelion's ear there was a hint of pleading in the tone, like a child throwing a tantrum that he didn't really expect to get him anywhere.
No, Thrawn said, his voice abruptly soothing. Perhaps he too had picked up on Cabalth's tone. The galaxy is not yet ready for you to lead, Master Cabalth. Later, when order has been restored, I will present it to you to govern as you please. But that time is not yet.
For a long moment, Cabalth remained motionless, his mouth working half invisibly behind his flowing beard. Then, almost reluctantly, he lowered his arms, and as he did so, the bridge was filled with muffled gasps and groans and the scraping of boots on steel decking as the crewers were released from the Jedi Master's control.
You will never present the Empire to me, Cabalth told Thrawn. Not of your own will.
That may depend on your ability to maintain that which I am in the process of recreating, Thrawn said.
And which will not come to be at all without you.
Thrawn cocked an eyebrow. You are the Jedi Master. As you gaze into the future, can you see a future empire arising without me?
I see many possible futures, Cabal said. In not all of them do you survive.
An uncertainty faced by all warriors, Thrawn nodded. But that was not what I asked.
Cabal smiled thinly.
Never assume you are indispensable to my empire, Grand Admiral Thrawn. Only I am that.
He sent his gaze leisurely around the bridge, then drew himself to his full height.
For now, however, I am pleased that you should lead my forces into battle.
He looked back sharply at Thrawn.
You may lead, but you will not destroy Coruscant. Not until I have my Jedi.
As I have said already, I have no intention of destroying Coruscant, Thrawn told him. For now, the fear and undermining of morale that accompany a siege will serve my purposes better.
Our purposes, Cabalth corrected. Do not forget that, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
I forget nothing, Master Cabalth, Thrawn countered quietly.
Good, Cabalth said, just as quietly. Then you may carry on with your duties. I will be meditating, should you require me. Meditating upon the future of my empire.
He turned and strode off the bridge, and Pelion let out a breath he hadn't realized he'd been holding.
"Admiral."
"Signal the Relentless, Captain," Thrawn ordered him, swiveling back around again. "Tell Captain Dorha I need a 500-man caretaker crew for the next 6 hours." Pelion looked down into the portside crew pit. Here and there, one could see a crewer sitting properly at his station, or an officer standing more or less vertically. But for the most part, the crewers were collapsed limply in their seats, their officers leaning against walls and consoles or lying trembling on the deck. "Yes, sir," he said, stepping back to his chair and keying for comm. "Will you be postponing the Coruscant operation?"
"No more than absolutely necessary," Thrawn said. "History is on the move, Captain. Those who cannot keep up will be left behind to watch from a distance."
He glanced back at the door through which Cabal had departed. "And those who stand in our way," he added softly, "will not watch at all." Chapter 13. They came into Coruscant in the dead of night, 10 of them, disguised as Jawas, slipping in through the secret entrance that palace security had carefully sealed and that Luke had now just as carefully unsealed. Getting to the tower unseen was no problem. No one had yet had the time to do anything about the Emperor's limited maze of hidden passageways. And so they filed silently into the suite behind Luke. And for the first time, Han found himself face to face with the bodyguards his wife had chosen to protect her and her children from the Empire. A group of Nogri. "We greet you, Lady Vader," the first of the gray-skinned aliens said in a gravelly voice, dropping to the floor and spreading his arms out to his sides. The others followed suit, which should have been awkward, or at least crowded, in the narrow suite entryway. It wasn't, which probably said something about their agility.
"I am Kokhmeim, warrior of the clan Eichmir," the Nogri continued, talking toward the floor. "I lead the honor guard of the Mal-Ari-Ush. To your service and protection, we commit ourselves and our lives."
"You may rise," Leia said, her voice solemnly regal. Han stole a glance at her, to find that her face and posture were just as stately as her voice. The sort of authority stuff that usually kicked in his automatic disobedience circuits. But on Leia, it looked good.
"As the Mal-Ari-Ush, I accept your service."
The Nogri got to their feet, making no more noise than they had getting down.
"My lieutenant, Movekar Clan Hachar," Kokhmeim said.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.